Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Thank you for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. We are on a journey to understand and to discover the phenomena that seems to exist all around the globe. We invite you to join us on this journey into the unknown.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the season premiere of season four of Fearscape Paranormal. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by Dr. Time himself, Mr. Josh Rutledge. Sir, you don't age forwards or backwards. You are consistently stuck as a 40-something-year-old man.
Well, actually, people always tell me that I look young for my age, so...
I didn't say anything about the way you look. Said you just have not aged backwards or forwards. You've just been like 43 for like 25 years.
I'm stuck in a time loop.
Yeah, you're just stuck in. You are your own personal Groundhog's Day, but it's not the day around you that doesn't loop. It's just your body. Your body just loops. Yeah, it's only your body that loops. Yeah. So obviously, you guys have missed that. So welcome back. Thank you guys so much for allowing us to take an amazing December off. Looks like JD took the reins over cryptidness there.
Yeah. Congratulations on your promotion, I guess.
I guess. He's not even here. He's still up at the South Pole. So
he's still up at
the South Pole. He has to go up because you know how Admiral Byrd had to get there?
Yeah.
Same way. So he had to go up to the North Pole to go down through the Earth to get to the South Pole. So
that's not how Admiral Byrd got there. But whatever.
That's how JD got there.
Yeah. That's how the guy in the Smoky God got there.
Same thing. It's all Admiral Byrd to me. It's all Admiral Byrd. He didn't.
Anyways.
Fly.
Yeah. Anyways. I mean, it was a great month off. Spent a lot of time with family. I know you did as well. Mm-hmm. And really appreciate you all kind of still sticking with us and catching in, the bonus episodes that were dropped here and there. Really looking to hit 2022 strong.
Man, we got an amazing season this year. Lots of cool stuff. Josh, while you were here, you picked up the keys to your new home in Arizona. So that's cool. I got a baby coming in 3 months, man. Like 2022 is going to be amazing. JD's excited to be a godfather. Like this is just like absolutely amazing. It's going to be a really good time. Good year. Good fun. We've got some amazing interviews coming down the road. Lots of fun topics. And as we had promised all through December, today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Rendlesham Forest incident, which we have been talking about for a while that we've been wanting to do. So it's going to be an action-packed episode.
Often dubbed the, Britain's Roswell.
So, yeah, absolutely. Got a couple few announcements before we get into that. First, I wanted to say, we actually don't have any creepy catch-up for being gone for a month. Josh, you even came out here, like I said, to get the keys and kind of get, some things squared away with the new home before you guys move out this summer. And we went out, did some UFO hunting, saw nothing. Some wild donkeys.
We were like driving along. I was like, oh, crap, it's wild donkeys.
Yep, I'm like, well, that's some wild ass right there. Yeah. And you were like, I don't know, it's some burrow.
We don't pun like that when we're just the two of us. We only pun when there's people to hear.
Oh, we don't. We don't. We're just normal dudes.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty interesting seeing some wild donkeys, but that's about as scary as it gets besides family.
Yeah. Lots of airplanes. Just, and again, I'll remark that like the last several times that we've gone out to look for stuff, especially myself with my brother here locally with the psionics, like I see no satellites. I don't know if like this time of year they're not flying over or what, but like,
they just didn't want anyone to mistake them for Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
That's probably what it was. And yeah, it's some crazy
Santa
crazy
Musk stuff. So
Santa, yeah. Santa Musk. But yeah, you know, it's just crazy. It's just nothing just happened. And I don't, you know, I think a lot of it is just being stressed out over the holidays. I had a ton of family come in. My brother from Belgium was here with his fiance, which was absolutely fantastic. I went to the Grand Canyon again and had an amazing time. But this time there was like half a foot of snow.
Yeah.
It was like 65 degrees in Phoenix and it was 0 degrees at the Grand Canyon. And of course, no snow at the bottom because it's a different temperature at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. It's warmer
right
down there. So that was really, really interesting. But yeah, like I said,
it's warmer in the crack. Is that what you're saying?
Much warmer in the crack. Kraken, that's a cryptid. Shout out to Santosh. He had his birthday on the 28th. We love him very much. Happy birthday, sir. He's perpetually stuck at 28, so that's really interesting. He's gonna be 20. He's been 28 a minute. So anyways, some other announcements, just kind of the standard things is make sure to check out all of our good stuff, fearscapepodcast.com. fearscapemedia.com. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/fearscapepod, and buymeacoffee.com/fearscape. You can go and, you know, help us get like stuff together for this year. I think, like I said, it's going to be a really fantastic year, and we're rambling, and somebody on YouTube's going, go ahead and just move to 22:27 to get straight to the topic.
Yeah,
so
so, but you know, also just a reminder, Apple, I think our two biggest platforms that people listen to us on are Apple and Spotify, and both now offer rate and review opportunities. So please, if you're an Apple listener, a Spotify listener, even if you're not a listener on either one of those platforms, jump out there and rate and review us. It really helps us out. And it kind of helps with the Apple and Spotify algorithm to kind of bump us up to the top and suggest us to people who may be looking for a show like what we have to offer.
Yep, so. Absolutely. And to our biggest announcement of the year, you guys know that we are huge supporters of the science and technology news organization, The Debrief. We've had a number of folks from The Debrief on there, on our show. We've interviewed them. We've become really good friends with them. And well, we have developed now a working relationship with them.
Right.
Josh and I are going to be premiering here in about a week or so, this week, I forget because I can't remember where things get recorded and when things go out because we haven't done this in a month. But we are doing a brand new YouTube show for The Debrief called Tech Talk. The Debrief's Tech Talk, starring Josh and Stefan, where we're going to be reviewing technology because obviously we are tech nerds and we love all that stuff. So as always, you guys can go to thedebrief.org to scope out any of their news articles and to get yourself prepared. We will be premiering that on their YouTube channel as well. So just search The Debrief on YouTube, and Tech Talk will be coming soon.
You know, we work a little bit of paranormal stuff into it, but really it's more around the tech and I'd say the more nerdy side of us, you know.
We're reviewing techs and
Star
apps
Wars-y and all that kind of stuff. So,
all the nerd stuff. Chris Plain, he's just like, yay, another nerd. That's exactly how he sounds.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. You know, go back and listen to his episode. That's what you'll hear.
Exactly. So we are, again, so very, very excited to be premiering Tech Talk on The Debrief. So be on the lookout for that. Look for all the information from us, as well as a shout out to Santosh again and our show Astral Stew. We should have a new episode here premiering soon as well. So we got a lot going on in 2022, and we ain't even touched the tip of the iceberg on the stuff that we've got planned for this year. So
guys, good year.
Be on the lookout. It's going to be some fun stuff. And now that we're done blowing sunshine up our own some burrows, let's go ahead and get moving quickly into our segments so we can move to our topic this week, which is the Rendlesham Forest incident. So let's get cracking with Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
Psychic Word of the Week. How I have missed you, June G. Blitzer. She's like, yeah, that's why you had no creepy ketchup, because you ain't talked about me in a month. Really. And I ain't been here to tickle your neck and tap on your shoulder while you're trying to watch TV. So,
because it ain't my wife giving me a head scratch. Nope. It's Juju Bletzer. She's like ghost, man. Like, it's Patrick Swayze. She's the Patrick Swayze in my life.
So instead of her helping you make a clay pot, she's helping you do a podcast.
Yes, a clay podcast. That's what she's doing. But anyway, so I had you pick a number between 1 and 700, because that's the main section of the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary, of course, which I didn't even say. Gosh, it's been forever, Josh. The Psychic Word of the Week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from Dr. June G. Bletzer. Rest in peace, honey. Bear, you had me move to page 666. The devil. And the first word that grabbed my image here was a phrase, which was veridical hallucination. Veridical hallucination. And it says in parentheses, Edgar Mitchell. And then it goes on to say, a visual or auditory psychic experience similar to sense perception, but without sensory stimulation or without being in the range of sensory awareness, that corresponds to a real event taking place. Second definition here says, the reception of uncontrolled psychic information that corresponds to actual facts.
I wonder why it has Edward Mitchell in parens.
Well, I'm probably guessing he's probably the dude. Are you looking him up?
Yeah.
I know Edgar Winter's band. That's a different dude, though.
I mean, there's a lot of Edward Mitchell, so I don't know.
I would put in veridical hallucination. So V-E-R-I-D-I-C-A-L, hallucination, and then Edgar Mitchell. So he may have been the person that coined that term. Because also next to that, it is also in parentheses, it says laboratory. So, but above it is veridical dream, which basically says a psychic experience during sleep that later becomes a real event. So a psychic dream. So this is kind of similar. Veridical hallucination is essentially another word for seeing a vision that comes to pass later on, right? So
there's actually quite a bit of information to be found about veridical hallucinations if you were to look it up. So I encourage anybody listening to do so.
Yeah. And we may have to cover that sometime. Maybe even on Astral Stew. That could be fun.
We could all have a veridical hallucination.
Yeah, we can have a hallucination with Santosh. He'll put us in that psychic sleep, dude. Next thing you know, we're cleaning his house. It's crazy.
I feel like if he was a wrestler, that would be a signature move, the psychic sleep.
It would be the psychic sleeper hold. Oh, my gosh. Oh, Santosh, I know you're listening. You got to work on the psychic sleeper hold. Would be amazing. But let's go ahead and move on, because I want to get, of course, to our topic, Josh. But I want to get to the next topic, the next segment, which is spooky news. All right. Let me tell you, there was quite a bit of spooky news over December, which is why we even did a full spooky news episode for one of our bonus episodes. But this piece of information came out. And of course, this really kind of, in a sense, involves Keith H. Because, you know, I'll get to that. So this is all over a number of different news outlets. I grabbed the Guardian.com just because I like The Guardian. And the headline reads, "The boy whose case inspired The Exorcist is named by a U.S. magazine." And so, of course, you know, The Exorcism of Roland Doe is we had Keith Age on. He had been out there. He had spoken to a number of the priests, things like that. And they had also confirmed with him. His contacts had confirmed this information, and so when it was brought to Keith, he's like, "Yep." So Keith did know about this, but he kind of kept it close too for anonymity's sake. But here's what this says here. The boy whose case inspired the portrayal of a demon-possessed child in the horror classic Exorcist has been named. The U.S. magazine named the then 14-year-old boy, previously known as Roland Doe, who underwent these exorcisms in Maryland and Missouri in 1949. His name is actually Ronald Edwin Hunkler, and he died last year, a month before his 86th birthday, after suffering a stroke at his home in Marriottsville, Maryland. So already this kind of makes sense that this information has come out now that he's passed, so that he has kept under the radar, which is pretty rare these days, so good on him. But here's what's interesting, Josh, and this is how it ties into what we love even more so. Hunkler was actually, in his adult life, a NASA engineer whose work contributed to the Apollo space missions of the 1960s, and he patented a technology that helped space shuttle panels withstand extreme heat.
Wow.
Yeah, totally crazy, man. One of his companions, a 29-year-old woman who asked to not be named, told the New York Post that Hunkler was always on edge about his NASA colleagues discovering that he was the inspiration for The Exorcist. She said, "On Halloween, we always left the house because he figured someone would come to his residence and figure out who he was and know where he lived and not let him have any peace. He, even though being in hiding, had a terrible life because he worried, she added. Hunkler eventually retired from NASA in 2001 after working for the agency for 40 years.
Wow.
40 years, man.
You know, that's, you know, unfortunately, I think the age of getting with a company and staying with a company until you retire is kind of gone away. But, you know, kudos to all the people who have done that in their lifetime, right? That found a company who really believed in it and then stuck with them through thick and thin. So,
yeah. The last bit of information here says that shortly before Ronald's death, a Catholic priest showed up at his home unexpectedly to perform last rites, said his companion. She said, "I have no idea how the priest knew to come, but he got Ron to heaven. Ron's in heaven and he's with God now," she told the New York Post. So very, very cool. I'm glad that he, you know, even though he feels like he didn't have peace, he did feel more peace than he realized, because he didn't get disturbed. People didn't find out, though. Roland and Ronald, a little too close for me. I think you could have picked a better name, like Frank.
Well, but the last name, you know, come on.
Yeah. And
I'll just say kudos to Keith and others who knew his true identity, right? But kept it a secret.
I mean, I always have a lot of respect for Keith Age, but there's another reason. I mean, he's our mentor, and he still kept that close to his chest, and I respect the hell out of that. So kudos to you, Keith, and rest in peace, Ronald. Let's go ahead and move on to our final segment, which is our Sasquatch sighting of the week, one of our newest segments. All right, Josh, so we're taking a look at a Sasquatch sighting for the week. Where are you pulling it from, and what do you got?
Yep. So this comes from the BFRO, or the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. That's BFRO.net if you want to go check them out. They're kind of like a MUFON. You can join them and be a member. And they even have a lot of non-member stuff that you can be involved in. They go out and do hunts and all that kind of stuff, and you can go out with them. It's pretty cool. Anyways, so this actually happened in March of 2021. Hard to believe it. I almost said March of last year because it was
it
last
was year. So you almost said it, but you were correct. Yeah. You were so, correct.
In the good old state of Florida, in Sarasota County.
So we're getting close to like Skunk Ape area and then things like that.
Yeah. So. So again, on March 27, 2021, between the hours of approximately 8 to 8:30 a.m., the individual who saw said he was preparing breakfast with his wife. The kitchen has a window that looks across their backyard. When he turned to ask his wife a question, movement outside the window caught his eye. He saw a dark bipedal figure walk from a group of trees toward a wooded area before disappearing from his line of sight. He asked his wife if she had seen that just as his 8-year-old granddaughter came running from the dining room yelling, "Grandpa, did you see that?" She had seen the figure as well from the back sliding glass door. She described it as big. He admits that he at first wondered what his neighbor was wearing, but realized it was taller than his 6'4" neighbor. He went on to describe that the figure was about 50 feet away with a slim build, but tall. It was walking west to east as they were looking north out the windows. This is from the investigator. It says the family is very credible as to what happened that morning. It was obviously something they had never expected to see or experience. When researching this area, it is not necessarily an area that one would expect to have this sort of activity. However, the homes are spaced out on 1 acre or more lots, and some are heavily wooded. So I think it's interesting, too, that, you know, I used to live in a house here in Kentucky that was could be described similarly, right? Mm-hmm. Spaced out houses with some of them wooded. And oftentimes in our backyards, we heard, you know, in my backyard, we heard what sounded like knocks and things coming from the wooded area. So
that's a noise I made with my mouth.
No, come on. It was, but you know, we would also hear like the really heavy coyotes, you know, at night. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they would get quiet and then you'd hear a knock off in the distance. So it's just,
oh yeah. I've been out there hearing them coyotes shut up all of a sudden, man. Yeah. Ooh, it's already creepy because them coyotes are coming and they just, I don't know. Well, there's something spooky about it, man.
It inevitably happens whenever I'm like doing an Estes, and so you're just
almost every
there.
Time, and I'm like, I don't want to disturb him, but I'd like to run. But yeah, so very cool. You said he was bigger than 6'4", which is I'm 6'5", so he's bigger than me, which is skinny. So immediately I just thought of a hairy Larry Bird. Like that's what I see, but like blonde colored, like
blonde.
Like Larry Bird's hair.
You know, it's also interesting that a lot of times Sasquatch and all and Skunk Ape and they're oftentimes described as very dark fur, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, are there blonde Sasquatch?
I bet you there are. I mean, there's so many different like subspecies of them. So who knows? I mean, it's not like we've really done a huge. Yeah. I mean, where's Ken Gerhard when you need him? Where's my cousin at?
You know, also when Sasquatch age, does their fur turn gray?
Dude, man. I don't know, because not all animals' furs turn gray. So
no, but like I had a dog that was tricolor, and the black parts on his face kind of got gray.
Oh yeah, my dog Kenobi's got some gray coming in. So yeah,
so
but I ain't never seen a gray giraffe.
No, I don't. Have you ever seen a gray bear? I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I've seen a silverback monkey, but I ain't never seen a. I mean, I saw a horse fly. I even saw a house fly, but I never seen an elephant fly. So I don't know.
Yeah. So, anyways, all good questions for our friends in West Virginia to.
That's right. Yeah, Joe Perdue, where you at? Tell me about them blonde my native cousins, the blonde Sasquatch, the sassafras Scots, saffron squatch. Jeez, yeah. Lord,
jeez, what are you talking about?
I don't know. It's Junji Bletsy. She's trying to like
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze me right now. But anyways, all right, Josh, I appreciate that. Also, anything Bigfoot just makes me want to give a shout out to our boy Wayne. We still miss you. Rest in peace, brother, as well. Anyways, let's go ahead and take a very quick break and come right back for the Rendlesham Forest incident. Hello, dear friends. I'm your head mister, Lord Stefan Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And together we are the Misters of the... let's try it again. The Misters of the Lance!
The Misters of the Dark!
Don't shut up! Whatever. Join us wherever you stream your favorite podcasts, or go to mistersofthedark.com, where we'll be discussing all things horror, from films and books to everything in betweensies. We also have the occasional victim. I mean, guest.
Only on the Fearscape Mania Network.
Shut up, Lance. Oh, I always get the last laugh. And we're back. Thank you guys so much for sticking around as you do. Season four is kicking off with one of the most famous UFO stories in modern times. I think all of these folks are still alive. So it's kind of becoming the new Roswell, whereas pretty much everyone in Roswell's dead, that was associated with that. But we still have these folks to talk to, and they're still showing up at conferences and books and all that jazz. So it's still a big thing. And we have audio, which is
really interesting. It'd be interesting, talk about the Roswell stuff. That show that was on that came out last year that our friend Jason McClellan was a part of, mm-hmm. that kind of broke down the Roswell case, and mm-hmm. applied AI to the audio testimony and stuff like that to see if they were lying and stuff. It would be interesting if somebody were to do the same thing with a lot of the testimony in this case. For me, it gave the Roswell case more credibility to hear that an AI program that is engineered to detect liars thought that most of the testimony was telling the truth. So
be interesting. So
anyways,
what do you got here, Josh, for blanket huggers out there for the Rendlesham Forest?
The Rendlesham Forest
incident. Which is fun because here it is in Britain, but it deals with Americans. We just can't keep our noses out of stuff.
So Rendlesham Forest is located in Suffolk, England. And the events that took place there happened in December of 1980. It involves two main Air Force bases, Bentwaters and Woodbridge. And it's interesting that both of these Air Force bases, at the time that this took place, were actually being operated by the United States Air Force, even though they originally were constructed to be RAF, Royal Air Force, mm-hmm. bases during World War II. So they were constructed originally in 1943. I'm just giving a little bit of information here about the bases. But during the Cold War, the United States Air Force took over so that they could have kind of a presence in Europe for all the stuff that was kind of going on with the Cold War. They had a couple of tactical fighter squadrons and things like that. It was shut down for a little while, and then now it's actually back open again since 2006 as a Ministry of Defense bases. So no longer underneath U.S. Air Force control, now back in Ministry of Defense control.
Just passing hands back and forth. Next year, it's going to the Irish. The Irish get it for a year. Everybody just gets it. It's like a redheaded stepchild. No offense to the Irish there.
I'm a redheaded stepchild.
This is true. You are. it's like it just gets passed back and forth, right? So, and in 10 years, it'll come back to us.
Now, there are a couple of claims that I wanted to talk about a couple of things here that are some claims about the area. So in a lot of places that I found that, you know, I listened to some podcasts, I watched some YouTube shows, I even watched the basement show that, you know, is hosted. I can't remember the gentleman's name who hosted it, but oftentimes Nick Pope was on it. And in fact, mm-hmm. in this case, Nick Pope was on. And they didn't really talk about these things that are kind of claimed to have happened in the area. So one of the claims that's kind of made by one of the witnesses for the Rendlesham case is that the U.S. Air Force had a massive stockpile of nuclear weapons at RAF Bentwaters.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of being kept hush hush, and it was actually against the treaty that they had with the British. Yeah. And so,
which is why it didn't get talked about a whole lot.
Yeah. So, in that recently, you know, as of the 1988 date, the CIA had issued a report that the Soviet military were mobilizing for an invasion at that point in time. And one of the things that this individual claims is that due to the increase in tensions, that's actually what brought on the sightings that we're about to talk about.
Mm.
And it kind of gets into that whole, you know, the UFO people at that time were really interested in all of our nuclear sites.
Yep. And we know, you know, flipping back to Roswell and things like that, that our biggest spike in UFO cases came after the igniting of the multiple atom bombs. Yeah. So it's very interesting. Here we are, and we hear this a lot, not just in Rendlesham, but in other UFO cases on military bases, that they have shut down these areas or completely made a nuclear device inert.
Yeah,
like craziness.
Well, and so, you know, some of the other stuff that's happened around these bases. So there's a lighthouse that's not too far away called the Orfordness Lighthouse. And the surrounding buildings were once used by the NSA for experience in radar mm-hmm. research in an effort to monitor all launches made by the Soviets and possibly the Chinese. The site was shut down in 1973. Also, Orfordness was a test firing range, and it was used for the development of atomic weapons. In some of the military buildings on site, there are still warning signs posted on site that there may be residual debris or things that are around the area, and so to use caution. So,
that's crazy.
So anyways, and then the Rendlesham incident is actually not the first UFO sighting in the area.
Say what?
Yep. So in that same area, in 1956, what's known as the Lake and Heath Bentwaters incident, radar picked up two high-speed objects that were performing really sharp turn maneuvers, things like that. So they launched two jet interceptors, and the pilots were able to track the objects and witness them performing a brief series of maneuvers before disappearing.
Wow.
So all that to be said is basically the case here is not what I've always heard reported is the Rendlesham incident kind of on its own, but never really taking it into account all these different kind of details that predate or were happening, you know, at the same time, you know, in the area. So now let's jump into what Rendlesham incident actually was.
Okay.
With all that stuff now floating around in your head.
In me noggin.
So the first night, around 0300 on the 26th December 1980, a security patrol near the east gate of RAF Woodbridge saw lights descending into nearby Rendlesham Forest. The servicemen initially thought it was a downed aircraft, but upon entering the forest to investigate, they saw what they described as a glowing object, metallic in appearance, with colored lights. As they attempted to approach the object, it appeared to move through the trees. And this is a quote, the animals on a nearby farm went into a frenzy. One of the servicemen, Sergeant Jim Peniston, also in his report claimed that he had encountered a craft of unknown origin while in the forest. So shortly after 0400, local police were called out to the scene, but reported that the only lights they could see were those from the Orford Ness Lighthouse, some miles away on the coast. Mm. So the following day, they went out to investigate the area, and they actually found three small impressions on the ground in a triangular pattern, as well as burn marks and broken branches on nearby trees. At 10:30 local time, local police were called out again to see the impressions. Local police apparently thought they could have been made by an animal. But we're going to listen here in just a few minutes to what's been called the halt tape. Because one of the main witnesses was Lieutenant Colonel Charles Halt. And when he went out and did his investigation on the second day, to do some radiation detections and just to do a good survey of the area, he found that some very interesting information as it relates to that kind of detail. So we're going to take just a minute here and listen to a couple of recordings from the halt tape.
So and this halt tape is what exactly?
Yeah, so this is, so again, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Halt, really the senior personnel on site, basically. He took his personal recorder out into the field and recorded everything that transpired. There's some interesting things that you'll hear in the recording that we'll talk about here in just a minute. You know, we'll kind of play a little bit, we'll talk a little bit, we'll play a little bit, and come back and fill you all in on some things that you may not have picked up on in the recording. So
suspected impact point. Having a lift car, we can't get the light all to work. Seems to be some kind of mechanical problem. Let's send back, get another light. Meantime, we're going to take some readings for the Gator Cutter and chase around here a little bit, waiting for another light all to come back in. Okay, we're now approaching area within about 25, 30 feet. What kind of readings are we getting? Anything?
Just minor clicks.
What are the impressions?
One,
is that a little bigger than they are?
Well, there's one more well.
Is that a security control?
We're still getting clicks. Can we read that on a scale?
Yes, sir. We're now on the 5-10 scale. And we're reading about third, fourth increment.
Okay, we're still comfortably safe here.
Do you have a light on, full gas ready? Can you have them, Sergeant?
There's still minor readings.
Have a light on with gas.
Orientation.
Security.
Nope. This one's good. Let's go to the third one over here.
Yes, now I'm getting some residual.
I can read down. The meter's definitely giving a little pulse. Okay, that's what I was going to say. Let's go to the center of the area next and see what kind of reading we get out there. You're reading the clicks. I can't hear the clicks.
Yes, sir.
Got about the center, Bruce?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to the center.
Yes, I'm getting
that's, that's the best deflection needle I've seen yet. Okay, can you give me an estimation? We're on the 0.5 scale. We're getting...
We have a couple of these.
That's approximately 0125 hours.
seen it go any higher.
Okay, we'll go out toward the...
Now it's picking up.
This is out toward the number one indentation where we first got the strongest reading. Yeah, it's similar to what we got in the center.
Not in a pod. This might be in the center.
This looks like an area here, possibly. It could be a blast. It's in the center.
It's hard to tell. You got to take your fingers about the freeze.
Here, too.
Up to what, 7?
What?
Just jumped
it
up to what?
7/10 there.
7/10 right there in the center?
Uh-huh. We found a small blast, what looks like a blasted or scruffed up area here.
We've got very positive readings. Let's see, is that near the center?
Yes, it is.
This is what we would assume would be the dead center.
Just pick it up more as we go along the whole area here now.
Up to 7/10? Or 7... 7 units, let's call it, on the 0.5 scale.
Yeah, so basically what you heard there is they were doing Geiger counter sweeps kind of around the area. There's, again, the 3 indentations that are in the ground. They did a Geiger counter sweep for each indentation and then kind of moved to the center of, or the perceived center of the space to kind of, you know, listen to or you know, see how many clicks or see what the reading is from the Geiger counter in that space. And what you heard there was that the it did spike up to,
yeah,
you know, 7/10. I've never read a Geiger counter before, but you know, they sounded like that was in their response that was a pretty big spike. And there's actually a Defense Intelligence Staff document that exists that basically says, you know, hey, you know, the background radioactivity for the area should be around, you know, 0.1 millo, and I can never say the word, millirentgens or something like that. And then, you know, so it's 0.1 per hour. So the readings that they were getting of, you know, 0.7, and, you know, 0.4, 0.5, those were higher than the background radiation. So there, it wasn't, you know, dangerous levels of radiation, but it was an increase in radiation than what was, normal for the area.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, you could absolutely hear the tone of their voices being wowed by it. There's a bit of awe because they don't really know what they're finding, and it's not like anything they had seen before. And you know, to see readings like that, I'm surprised they weren't frightened, because, you know, we know what Geiger counters do. And so if I were to see a reading that high, I would be like, I need lead now. To get a lead.
Well,
suit.
Yeah, and you know, if it's if that's kind of the normal reading in the area, then you could even argue that, you know, even what I said about earlier around them testing or building nuclear material, you know, earlier on site, mm-hmm. you know, those were the average reading, even with that have been the case. So, you know, I don't think that we could read into that and say that, well, the reason it's a spike is because they were testing nuclear material, you know, 20 years ago. Because that's the normal reading for the area. So is the point.
And that's the beauty of these recordings, is that we do have evidence that this indeed did take place in the way that they said it took place. Right.
Yep.
You know, so because we have the audio evidence here that they did, you know, have to check this thing out. So that on its own already is something that's unidentified. Doesn't necessarily mean flying object or anything yet, but, you know, at least we've got some unidentified things in this area that are crazy to me. Making animals get frenzy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, animals getting crazy. Must be a party going on.
Yep.
So so I'm going to play another little excerpt here, about 2.5 minutes or so. And this is just, again, some more site scans, but more detailed information around what they're seeing, you know, on site, for you to kind of paint that mental picture.
You're staying steady up around 2 to 3 to 4 units now. Yeah.
One of these trees that face into the blast, what we assume is a landing site, all out of the bridge and facing in the same direction towards the center. The same.
That's interesting. Well, let's go this way around the circle here. Turn it back down here.
Pick it up on the collection.
Let me see that. That's kind of funny. That's you're right about the abrasion. I've never seen a tree that's never seen a pine tree but damage react that fast.
I've got a bottle to put that in.
Yeah, you got a sample bottle?
We'll just go ahead. For the soil.
Can I get some of that? Yeah, here. Sit this on the ground. Okay, from now on, let's identify that as point number one. That stake there. So you all know where it is. We have to sketch it. You got that, said Nevels?
Yes, sir.
Closest okay. Closest to the wood bridge base.
Be point one.
And let's go clockwise from there.
Point two.
Go ahead, so this tree is between point two.
Around the ham and the burrows and two other personnel requesting to rendezvous with you at your location.
Tell them negative at this time. We'll tell them when they can come out here. We don't want them out here right now.
Okay, the sample, you're going to mark this sample number one.
Yes.
Have them cut it off and include some of that sap and all. Is between indentation 2 and 3 on a pine tree about 5 feet away, about 3.5 feet off the ground.
I've got some more of it.
There's a round abrasion on the tree about 3.5-4 inches in diameter. It looks like it might be old, but strange as a crystalline pine sap has come out that fast. You see those other trees here that are damaged in similar fashion?
Yes, yeah, so
I may put them towards the center of the landing. So.
Okay, why don't you take a picture of that and remember your picture, and you got to be writing this down. Well, it's going to be on the tape.
I've got a tape measure with you.
This is the picture. Your first picture will be at the first tree, the one between mark 2 and 3. Meantime, I'm going to look at a couple of these trees over here.
We are getting some.
You're getting rains on the tree you're taking samples from on the side facing the suspected landing site.
4 clicks max.
Up to 4. Interesting. That's right where you're taking the sample now. 4. That's the strongest point on the tree?
Yes, sir. If you come to the back, there's no clicks whatsoever.
No clicks at all on the back. It's all on the
maybe
side
one,
facing the... Interesting. The indentations look like something twisted as it got, you know, as it sat down on them. Looks like someone took something and sat it down and twisted it from side to side.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange.
We're looking at the same tree we took the sample off with this, what do you call it, star scope?
Uh-huh, star scope.
Getting a definite heat reflection off the tree about 3 to 4 feet off the ground?
Yes, where the spot is. Exactly
same place where the spot is. We're getting a heat.
There's a spot on a tree directly behind us. I picked up the same thing. One off to your right.
Three trees in the area immediately adjacent to the site within 10 feet of the suspected landing site. We're picking up heat reflection off the tree.
Yeah, so couple of things there that I...
A few things.
I think it's really interesting that, you know, if you heard they're getting, again, a spike of a Geiger counter spike up to 0.4 on the front of the tree that was kind of facing the landing site. But on the back of the tree, there's nothing.
Yeah, it reminds me of... it was done in like the first or second episode of Project Blue Book where they decided it was just an owl.
You're talking about the it's the one where it's supposedly the monster in the woods or in the clearing and they
swamp monster or something.
Crap, now it's gonna bother me that
I know.
But anyways, go ahead.
I like keep wanting to be like Flatwoods. Is it
that's what it is.
Flatwoods monster. Yeah. Because I kept wanting to get it. I kept getting it mixed up with the West Virginia one. The Flatwoods monster, where that was the same thing. There was that massive ring of like burnt and crushed things, but yet the other sides of the trees completely untouched.
Right. Yeah.
So
a couple other things to note. So there you hear him on there on the tape. Again, the main person speaking is the Colonel Charles Halt. But you heard him there say, take a picture. This is going to be your first picture.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a picture from the area that anybody's uncovered in any documentation.
No, because you know that stuff was burned right away. I mean, if it was, I mean, truth be told, and I know we didn't really touch on this yet, but if it wasn't for Holt's memo, like, I don't even think any of this would have come to light.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but it's his memo that even brought that. But I think by that point, by the time the memo had already come out, stuff was already mixed.
Yeah. And then the other thing is you hear them ask for a collection tube to take samples from the area. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, what was found of those samples and where is that report?
Yeah, and where is it now? Is it in that warehouse in Indiana Jones? Like,
yeah.
Did Bob Lazar get to hang out with it? Like, where is it?
So that was really interesting. Again, just for me, painting kind of a mental picture of the area and what they're looking for. And again, like you described there for that episode of Project Blue Book and the Flatwoods Monster, it does very feel like there's this kind of open area where all this stuff is concentrated. And then once you get beyond it, there's just really nothing else, you know, kind of going on.
Yeah.
So I've got another little clip here to play. This is they finally are able to get one of the LIDAR units out because there's, if you remember in the very first recording we listened to, had some mechanical issues for some reason, and so they had to go
for back some to base
and get another one. So the next little clip here is some investigation of the indentations with that secondary piece of equipment.
Okay, stop. Light on. Hey, this is eerie.
What is the hot spot?
This is strange. Here, someone want to look at the spots in the ground? Whoops, what you know?
We're walking all over the block.
Okay,
sir. There's one.
Okay, let's step back, not walk all over. Come back here, somebody put a beam on them. You're going to have to be back 10 or 15 feet. You see it? Okay, lights off. What do you think about the spot? Yeah. Left here at the first spot? Okay, that's what we'd call spot number three. Let's go to the back corner and get spot number one. Spot number one. Here's spot number one, right here. Spot number one, right here. Do you need some light? There it is, right there. You focused? Okay. Looking out, spot number one through the starlight scope.
Take a slight increase in light as I go over.
Slight increase in light at spot number one. Let's go look at spot number two. Spot number two is right over here. Right here. See it? Okay, get focused on it. Tell me when. Okay. Lights on. Let's see what we get on it. Just a slight increase.
Try to center.
The center spot. Well, it really isn't center. It's slightly off center. It's right there. Okay. I'm going to get your reading on it right there.
Okay.
Tell me when you're ready.
Ready.
Okay, lights out. This is the center spot we're looking at now, almost the center.
Yeah, slight increase.
Slight increase there. This is slightly off center toward the 1-2 side. It's some type of abrasion or something in the ground where the pine needles are all pushed back more. We get a high reading about the deflection of 2 to 3, maybe 4, depending on the point on it.
Want to check it? Yes.
You said there's a positive after effect?
Yes, there is definitely. That's on the center spot. There is an after effect.
What does that mean?
It means when the lights are turned off, once we are focused in and allow time for the eyes to adjust, we are getting an indication of a heat source coming out of that center spot, as which will show up on us.
Heat or some form of energy. It's hardly heat at this stage of the game.
All right. So, again, and, you know, they're looking at the spots, and basically what they're doing is, you know, they're finding the spot with the scope, with their flashlights on, and you hear them say, okay, lights out, and they let the lights go out. let their everything adjust. And after they do so, they're getting, they are picking up some sort of signature left behind on the equipment. So, you know, what's really interesting is everything that we've just heard over the last few minutes. The skeptics have said it's either a meteor fragment that landed in the area, and that's what caused this, although there was apparently no meteor fragments you know, captured and recorded, or there was some sort of atmospheric condition that caused it, but you know, basically everything is anything except the possibility of it being a UFO or extra extra human origin, let's say.
And what's really interesting too is, you know, this is December of 1980, so it's England, it's cold,
right?
You know, and you're finding heat signatures that aren't animals.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, if you, you know, if you, like, if you go out in your backyard, well, maybe not where you are, well, even when you are in the wintertime, if you go out in your yard and you dig a 6-inch hole in the ground and you look at it with a heat, you know, a heat sensing camera or whatever, you're going to see heat in the ground because there's, because the earth naturally, you know, holds heat in the ground.
It's basically a big hot pocket.
But I mean, if the hole in the ground though has been exposed to the outside air for a long time, which at this point is over a day, right? It's a day later when they're doing this investigation. Then there should be no residual heat there left over from, you know, the creation of the hole. So
yeah, wouldn't, I mean, even a meteor fragment in the middle of winter would have dissipated its heat by this point, unless it was so large. But if it was that large, England would be gone.
I don't know, it'd be gone, but it would definitely have been noted in the recording or in the report that we found a huge chunk of rock that we couldn't explain. You know, I mean, it would have been
and astronomers would have seen it as well.
So for the next 5 minutes or so, I'm going to play for you the rest of the tape, and I won't hint at anything,
spoil it.
I won't spoil it, but just make sure you're listening and you don't skip ahead.
Looking directly overhead, one can see an opening in the trees plus some freshly broken pine branches on the ground underneath. Looks like someone came off about 15 to 20 feet up. Some small branches about an inch or less in diameter. 0148, we're hearing very strange sounds out of the farmer's barnyard animals. It's very, very active, making an awful lot of noise.
You have been a pigmentation.
You just saw a light where? Wait, slow down. Where?
Right in this position here, straight ahead, in between the tree. There it is again.
Watch.
Straight ahead off my flash right there, yeah, sir. There it is.
Hey, I see it too. What is it?
We don't know, sir.
So, can I get some word? Yeah, it's a strange, small red light. Looks to be out maybe a quarter to half mile, maybe further out. I'm going to switch off. The light is gone now. It was approximately 120 degrees from the site. Yeah. Is it back again?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's the flashlight, sir. Let's move out to the edge of the clearing so we can get a better look at it. See if we can get the star scope on it. The light's still there, and all the barnyard animals have gotten quiet now. Yeah, we're heading about 110 to 120 degrees from the site out through to the clearing now. Still getting a reading on the meter. About 2 clicks. Meter's jumped 3 to 4 clicks, getting stronger.
Now it's coming up. Hold up, there we go. It's about approximately 4 foot off the ground. It's coming up to 110 degrees.
All right, just turn the meter off. You gotta say that again. About 4 feet off the ground, about 110 degrees, getting a reading of about 4 clicks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, meter.
Now it's dying.
No, it's dying. I think it's something other than the ground. I think it's something that's something
about
variable here.
A tree right over.
We just run into the first night bird we've seen. We're about 150 or 200 yards from the site. Everything else is just deathly calm. There's no doubt about it. There's some type of strange flashing red light ahead.
There's yellow.
I saw a yellow tinge in it, too. Weird. It appears to be maybe moving a little bit this way. It's brighter than it has been.
Yeah.
It's coming this way. It is definitely coming this way. Pieces of it are shooting off. There is no doubt about it. This is weird.
It'll last.
Yeah, definitely moving.
Two lights. One light to the front, okay. One light to the left.
Keep flashlights off. There's something very, very strange. Get the headset on. See if it gets any stronger. Okay. Give us a rundown.
The notation that this is on a beta reading, too.
It's on a beta reading?
Beta
okay.
Still has been removed.
Okay. Pieces are falling off it again.
But it just moved to the right.
Yeah.
Off to the right.
Strange. Oh, well, one to the left. Let's approach to the edge of the woods up there. Can you undo without lights? Let's do it carefully. Come on. Okay, we're looking at the thing. We're probably about 200 to 300 yards away. It looks like an eye winking at you. It's still moving from side to side. And when you put the star scope on it, it sort of has a hollow center, a dark center. It's like a pupil of an eye looking at you and winking. And the flash is so bright to the star scope that it almost burns your eye. We passed the farmer's house and crossed into the next field. Now we have multiple sightings of up to 5 lights with a similar shape and all, but they seem to be steady now rather than a pulsating or glow with a red flash. We just crossed the creek, and we're getting what kind of readings now? Getting through 3 good clicks on the meter, and we're seeing strange lights in the sky. 244, we're at the far side of the second farmer's field, and made sighting again about 110 degrees. This looks like it's clear out to the coast. It's right on the horizon. Moves about a bit and flashes from time to time. Still steady or red in color. Also, after negative readings in the center of the field, we're picking up slight readings, 4 or 5 clicks now on the meter. 305, we see strange strobe-like flashes to the rather sporadic, but there's definitely something some kind of phenomenal. 305, at about 10 degrees horizon directly north, we've got 2 strange objects, half moon shape, dancing about with colored lights on them. That guessed to be about 5 to 10 miles out, maybe less. The half moons have now turned into full circles. As though there was an eclipse or something there for a minute or two. 0315, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south, 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in the north are moving, one's moving away from us.
Moving out fast.
This one on the right takes away, too.
Yeah, we're both heading north. Okay, here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now. Now we're observing what appears to be a beam coming down to the ground. This is unreal. 0330, and the objects are still in the sky, although the one to the south looks like it's losing a little bit of altitude. We're turning around and heading back toward the base. The object to the south is still beaming down lights to the ground. 0400 hours, one object still hovering over Woodbridge Base at about 5 to 10 degrees off the horizon, still moving erratic and similar lights and beaming down as earlier.
And that's where it ends.
So the question is I don't know. I can't imagine being those dudes, man.
Well, I mean, the main skeptical view that's presented for what they were seeing was the lighthouse. Mm-hmm. That is several miles away.
And I feel, look, man, I'm all about being skeptical. We always need to
right.
be. We should never rush into things quickly believing. But these guys were not noobs on the space. This is not the first time they were at the space. Mm-hmm. They knew that lighthouse was there. If it was something they could see from that area, they've been near that area, they would have known immediately that it right. was a lighthouse.
Yeah.
That's my opinion on that.
Plus, I've seen, I don't know, 5 or 6 lighthouses.
Same.
In the U.S. And maybe they're different in England, but most of them shine a white light. Mm-hmm. Or... at the time, maybe more of like a an amber colored light.
The yellow lights.
But I don't think it would ever be confused with red.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I know that there's oftentimes at an airport, there might be, you know, a red light and a white light that flashes around. But again, to your point, they're not new people. I mean, they're not, they've been in the area for a while, long enough to know what is a lighthouse and what is not. And then when they talk about it, you know, shooting pieces off of it, and then it kind of breaks up into five different lights off in the sky. And then, you know, one of them hovers over the Woodbridge base and shines a beam down. I mean, I just...
Right. And these guys are Air Force. So they're up in the air at night a lot of times. They would have seen these things that skeptics say are common occurrences.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I don't want to make sure that not everybody who's in the Air Force is up in the air.
But the Air Force is. I didn't say these guys, but... The Air Force is in the air consistently. And when this memo came out and all this stuff, people have been like, oh, well, you know, I do flights all the time. I see that the lighthouse has a red light and it flashes all the time.
Yeah.
Right. That didn't happen. They have friends that fly. They would be like, I'm sure they were like, did you ever see any of this stuff happen? Did it? No, you don't see a consistent light beam shine down on Woodbridge.
Right. Well, and it's interesting there that he said, you know, it stayed there for a while. If you caught the timestamps, but basically at like 0300, it was over Woodbridge shining a light down. It was there again at 0330, and then it was there again at 0400. So at least for an hour, there's this craft hovering over Woodbridge shining a light down.
Right. Shine a light, shine a light.
So yeah, you know, I do want to take just a minute though and read the official report that Charles Halt submitted to the Department of the Air Force.
So the famous memo there.
Yep.
So which is interesting, because like he kept trying to report it like that.
Right.
It was the thing, and everybody's like, eh.
So
and here so we wrote a memo.
Yeah. So he wrote this memo on 13 January 1981. So just, you know, maybe what, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after.
Yeah.
January 13th, 1981. Subject, unexplained lights. To the Royal Air Force. 1. Early in the morning of December 27th, 1980, two USAF security police patrolmen saw unusual lights outside the back gate at the RAF Woodbridge. Thinking an aircraft might have crashed or been forced down, they called for permission to go outside the gate to investigate. The on-duty flight chief responded and allowed three patrolmen to proceed on foot. The individuals reported seeing a strange glowing object in the forest. The object was described as being metallic in appearance and triangular in shape, approximately 2 to 3 meters across the base and approximately 2 meters high. It illuminated the entire forest with a white light. The object itself had a pulsing red light on top and a bank of blue lights underneath. The object was hovering or on legs. As the patrolman approached the object, it maneuvered through the trees and disappeared. At this time, the animals on a nearby farm went into a frenzy. The object was briefly sighted approximately an hour later near the back gate. 2. The next day, three impressions, 1.5 inches deep and 7 inches in diameter, were found where the object had been sighted on the ground. The following night, December 29th, 1980, the area was checked for radiation. Beta and gamma readings of 0.1 millirentgens were recorded with peak readings in the three depressions and near the center of the triangle formed by the depressions. A nearby tree had moderate 0.05 to 0.07 readings on the side of the tree toward the depressions. 3. Later in the night, a red, sun-like light was seen through the trees. It moved about and pulsed. At one point, it appeared to throw off glowing particles and then broke into five separate white objects and then disappeared. Immediately thereafter, three star-like objects were noticed in the sky. Two objects to the north and one to the south, all of which were about 10 degrees off the horizon. The objects moved rapidly in sharp angular movements and displayed red, green, and blue lights. The objects to the north appeared to be elliptical through an 8 to 12 power lens. They then turned to full circles. The objects to the north remained in the sky for an hour or more. The object to the south was visible for 2 or 3 hours and beamed down a stream of light from time to time. Numerous individuals, including the undersigned, witnessed the activities in paragraphs 2 and 3. Charles I. Holt, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force, Deputy Base Commander.
So yeah, that's the infamous memo. And to your previous comment, you're right. I mean, I don't think if that memo had not been filed, this would have never materialized.
Yeah. And, you know, we, well, not we as in the royal we, but we as a people, this was discovered through one of the US Freedom of Information Act, you know. Yeah. that's how this was discovered. And you know, a lot of skeptics will say, hey, Holt's dates are crazy, there's some different things. Well, he wrote this 2 weeks after the fact, you know, like dates and times and things like that, and he was being rushed because he was trying to figure out a way to get this reported. Yeah. And there was just a general that was like, I don't know, write a memo. And like kind of it was kind of like a side thing to kind of get him off his case. So Holt did indeed write the memo, and that's kind of how it started to, you know, get the light shined upon it.
Shine the light on.
Right.
Anyways, so to date, or so far in our presentation, I have not spoken about much about Sergeant Jim Penniston.
Right.
Who was one of the individuals who was out on site. And that's really because I wanted to save a lot of Jim's stuff for the end, because it's interesting, to say the least. So Sergeant Jim Penniston was one of the individuals who was on site the first evening. He was one of the patrolmen that went out to investigate the, you know, landing site, whatever. Mm-hmm. Did see the craft. But he takes it one step farther, and in his account, he said that he actually touched the craft.
Yeah.
And I've got a little excerpt here from Nick Pope's book on the topic, the incident in Rendlesham. And I want to read a little bit of that here from the book. As reported or referenced from Jim.
As I move along the left side of the craft, I see what appears to be symbols of some kind, which were coming into view as I move closer. My heart is beating as if it would jump out of my chest as I write down what I am observing. I am shaking. It is beyond control, and I cannot stop the shaking. I stretch my hand out and close it into a fist, trying to regain steadiness. It seemed to help a little as I look down the side of the craft. I see the inscription is like nothing I have ever seen before. No aircraft marking or no writing that I can identify. I am in an immense feeling of being overwhelmed, stacked with a feeling of total disbelief. After quickly drawing the glyphs down in my notebook, I was ready for a second go-around of this craft of unknown origin. So I put my notebook back in my pocket and initiated the second walk-around in a 360 motion. More concentrating on the detail of the craft and the fact that it seems to be defying gravity by the absence of observation of landing gear or at least landing gear as I have known it to be. As I walked down the right side of the craft, I realized that I was still intact and not harmed. I was making small moves of assessment, noting that no sign of threat or aggression was apparent at this point. I figured if I was to die, it would have happened at this point. A small feeling of relief enveloped me, so I had decided to take it a step further. I decided to touch the outer skin of the craft. Or maybe I was compelled to do that. It was never clear to me. As I ever so slowly walked or shuffled, I took my hand and touched the craft momentarily. Then I started to shuffle along while taking my hands and running them along the side of the craft, one hand over the other as I moved around it. After almost a complete circle, I came back to the symbols or glyphs, if you will, running my left hand from the smooth fabric to a coarse sandpaper feel of the glyphs, slowly feeling and tracing with my hand these pictorials. I run the bottom of the glyphs, which measured about 3 feet long and a handprint high in height, was the first one I touched. Then I traced my fingertips on, and then on to the next, and so on. I left not touching the large one till last. It seemed like this was by design. I was curious, but I felt this was the key to the craft. I took my fingers and ran them slowly around the outer circle of the craft. Then I took my fingers off and hesitated while making a closed hand. And then I opened my hand and flatly pressed the palm of my hand on the large triangle. What was to happen next defies reality. For I was no longer to see. What I was seeing in what I will call the mind's eye was bright and steady, brilliant light. I was squinting. Then the stream of ones and zeros ran relentlessly as I was unable to see my surroundings. I was scared, though I seemed to understand it was not harmful but required. I am not sure how long this took place, this bright light with flashing of these ones and zeros. Seconds or minutes, it seemed like a brief moment. I finally released my hand from the craft. The ones and zeros stopped. Seeing no damage, I was going to do that again. No need to have a physical contact again with the craft. Scary and unreal it all was. I started to see the craft generating color through the fabric of the craft again. It started to become bright again and began moving through the trees and then hovered at the top of the trees. And with a flash and a blink of an eye, it was gone. I hear movement to my right. It's John. I'm wondering where he had come from, where he was during this encounter.
So
I'm familiar with that, but it still shakes me.
Yeah,
still I'm hugging my blanket right now.
What would you do if you're in the woods and you came across a craft that you then recognized? Would you go up
and, I would push you in front of me
and feel, let's say you're by yourself.
Oh, if I'm by myself, I don't know, man. Like, I get scared really easy, but, like, I'm curious,
curiosity,
too.
Yeah.
I feel like I would want to touch it, too. Like, I mean, yeah, especially if I don't see any creature or anything. Like, I'm going to touch
that
it.
Nothing that can physically harm you. You'd think you would, you know, feel so relatively safe and go ahead and take the leap.
Yep. And then I would run. I would smack it and run, like, essentially what I would do. But yeah, and it's interesting, you know, him getting not only the glyphs, which are really interesting, and I believe you can find
you can find the drawings of them. Yeah.
But the binary code comes into play, you know, which is where skeptics really dig in here, because he didn't really share the binary code till like 30 years later. But he had it written down from years before.
You know what I find really interesting? You know, we talked about Stephen Greer put together his, you know, press club UFO briefing many years ago. That was kind of his foray into the UFO world. And, in you know, whether or not people agree with, you know, where he is now, at that point in time, the panel of people that he put together to present was amazing.
Oh, he was a progenitor of Disclosure, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, without that instance, we wouldn't be where we're at.
Colonel Halt and Jim Peniston were members of that panel that presented mm-hmm. that day with Greer. So, you know, Nick Pope, if you go to the basement episodes on Revenge from Forest, you know, Nick Pope talks about, you know, his impression of Jim Peniston is nothing but honest, in his words, not seeking fame in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, it really boils down to you. What do you choose to believe? But I do have here, again, in Nick Pope's book, on the topic. So previously 6 pages of the binary numbers were made available, mm-hmm. From Jim. For Nick Pope's book, all 38 pages were made available.
Wow.
And they actually worked with some specialists and translated the binary code into what the results were. And so I'm just going to read through what they were. So you've got Exploration of Humanity, 666-8100. So there you go, Stefan. That's why I picked 666.
Okay. I thought you was just starting to listen to Ghost or something now.
Then the next line is some coordinates, GPS coordinates, for an island off the coast of the UK that is at present no longer there, but on some older maps, some older world, you know, world geographical mm-hmm. maps, does exist.
Atlantis.
There is a line that says continuous for planetary advan. Then it kind of cuts off. And then another grouping of coordinates for Caracol, Belize, Sedona, Arizona.
Sedona just never stops showing up.
The Great Pyramid in Giza, the Nazca lines in Peru. I'm going to butcher this name, Tai Shan Ku in China. Portal at Temple of Apollo in Greece. Then it says eyes for your eyes. Then it gives the origin of that island that's off the coast of the UK that no longer exists. And then it says origin year 8100. It's interesting here that this origin year 8100, everybody assumes, or from this they take and they go the time traveler route.
Right.
This is where the, you know, kind of far off theories start to come in with, you know, this is a time traveler from the year 8100, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But I would maybe propose that we may not be looking at 8100 AD, since there's no, we took it to AD. It could be 8100, what we would consider BC, or some other calendar that we're not tracking.
Well, I mean, even then, if you follow along those lines, you know, we talk about this island being no longer there, but is on old world maps. It would have been there in 8100 BC.
Yep. So, and there's often talks, you know, you and I have talked a lot about in Santosh and others around, you know, the whole idea of, you know, the history of Atlantis and Lemuria and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, was there once an ancient
Admiral Byrd flying through the poles?
You know, that lived on Earth, or still does even. And, you know, so yeah, I just, it's really interesting to me that people would take this and go immediately to time travelers from the future and not necessarily time travelers from the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, that's because when you think of the past, you think of less
our past, right?
Right. You think of less technological,
right?
You know, so that is a big reason why.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, the amount of podcasts and blogs and books that are out there from skeptics on this as opposed to believers. It's amazing to me, that there is groups of people out there that have societies called skeptic societies, where what they do is get together to debunk things. That's just
but
crazy
that's not,
to me.
To me, that's not skeptics. That's like, I refuse to, in my opinion, a skeptic is someone who looks for evidence for or against whatever the theory or the idea is. Mm-hmm. A lot of these societies are people who are biasedly against whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anything. And they're only looking for evidence that disproves it.
Yeah. Which we've talked about a thousand times. You know, the same can work on the side of proving things, you know.
It's true.
A skeptic can very much say, well, there was a lighthouse 3 miles away, therefore it debunks it because it could have been the lighthouse. And so they can easily debunk something paranormal by saying something could have been. But on the positive side of things, we could say, well, it could have been an unidentified flying object, but that doesn't count because we need hard facts.
Right.
But yeah, those are the skeptics I have issues with, when there's no hard facts to back up their skepticism, but they require hard facts to back up the front side of things.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a totally blanked on what I was going to call it. But anyways, yeah, it's definitely a problem. Let's call it a problem.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my presentation for the Rendlesham incident. And again, kind of going back to the information that I gave before we dove into it around the history of the area, the possibility that the United States Air Force may have been storing nuclear weapons on site, the ramp up or, you know, from the CIA report, the potential ramp up of Soviet invasion. And the idea
It was 1980. So.
Yeah, and the idea that so many of these sightings and interests were at our nuclear facilities already, you know, with other reports, really makes you wonder if this was some sort of a deterrent or even just a, hey, look at, you need to look at this site. You know, hey, British intelligence, you need to look at what's going on over here. You know, there might be some problems going on or whatever. So, yeah.
I don't know, man. There's a lot that's out there. I mean, even in 2010, you know, Holt signed an affidavit by both the UK and the US, doubling down basically on his information. I mean, he is hardcore, with this.
Nobody, you know, of the original John Burroughs, Jim Peniston, and Holt, I mean, none of them have backed down from their statements. Nobody has reversed anything they've said. You know, people always criticize Peniston because it took him 30 plus years to come out and make an official statement. Mm-hmm. Although if you listen to Jim would tell you that when he went back to the base, he wrote out 4 pages.
Yep.
And then somebody else typed up a summary of events that was like 2 paragraphs and said, this is what you're going to say.
Yep. And so, we hear that very commonly happen quite a bit. Well, popular enough, in 2005 the Forestry Commission used lottery proceeds to create a trail in Rendlesham Forest due to the public interest and nicknamed it the UFO Trail, so you can actually go out there and kind of follow along those lines and see where everything is at. So again, this is a huge case, it is something that is still actively being investigated and pursued. You know, our guys are still out there, they're still talking and doubling down on this, and there's a lot more people that continue to come out about it. You know, like you're constantly finding you know, people that just happen to be on base saying, yeah, I saw that beam of light, or different things like that. If you do want a skeptic's view on things, I highly recommend season 2 of Strange Arrivals. He does a very good job of reporting on what happened while carrying a very skeptical side of things, but still very interesting. It's like the first 3 or 4 episodes of season 2, they talk about Rendlesham. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, really, really just fascinating story that, like I said, is still being looked at today, because so many people are still alive that were there.
Oh yeah, yeah, they are. And and Jim, you know, Jim will talk to just about anybody who, you know, asks him about it. So you know, you might see a, you know, a part 2 of this episode in the coming months, where we get the chance to talk to Jim about his account and what he witnessed. So
but yeah, thank you, Josh,
for incredible research. I know you've been working on that all month. And just like I said, YouTube, there's just so much information out there.
Yeah.
So much great. Nick Pope, of course, what a great author. So he's got some really great information on this. Get out there, check this stuff out.
And I will say that Jim also wrote his own book. It's called The Rendlesham Enigma, Book One Timeline. And, you know, a lot of this, I mean, you know, he is directly quoted in Nick Pope's book, but of course he has got some additional detail in his own book, and both books are a really good read. I highly recommend them.
Yeah, definitely. I know I'm going to check it out, and saying book one implies there's going to be a book two. So Jim, I hope if you're listening and we get a chance to talk to you, I'm going to be asking you about book two. So be ready. Yeah,
if you're Kindle Unlimited people, Jim's book is available for free as a part of Kindle Unlimited.
Ooh, so. Nice. Good to know. All right, Josh. Well, let's go ahead and get moving on. We got to get out of here. This was our double-sized season premiere episode, but I do want to start to wrap things up, and I want to go ahead and move to our final segment of the week, which is the encounter from the Fearscape. All right, our encounter for the Fearscape, four encounters from the Fearscape, comes from a really awesome dude, man. Like, I've been chatting with this guy quite a bit. He's, you know, slowly becoming a friend, big time listener, John Matthews from Manchester in the UK, in the United Kingdom there. So it's one of the reasons I picked this, since we're talking about a British event. I wanted to bring in John's here. But he sent me an encounter from the Fearscape here, his listener story, and it's pretty cool. So let's go ahead and take a listen to that.
I work as an engineer during the day, so quite logically, I'm a problem solver, grounded and down to earth. I clean a doctor's surgery in the evenings to get extra money to try and get out of debt, and I'm quite OCD in my routines and procedures. I like to have things in their place so I know where everything is when I need it. I keep my upstairs cleaning things in the kitchen. You know, like the toilet cleaner, the multi-service cleaner, cloths, etc. All in their own place. And when I'm done, they go back again. Well, I took the toilet cleaner into the shower room. I put some toilet cleaner down the toilet, then put the bottle on the floor while I took the mop handles from the shower and put new mop heads on, which they were kept in the shower room in a large bag. I turned around to pick up the toilet cleaner and couldn't find it. I looked all around, on the radiator, the floor, the shelf, even in the shower. Nothing. I couldn't find it. I went back into the kitchen, and there it was, on top of the kitchen units. There's no one else in the surgery other than one doctor downstairs, so no one had sneaked around and moved it. Even if I'd had a brain fart or something and moved it without remembering, which, why would I do that in the middle of putting on mop heads? I would have put it in the cupboard rather than on the top. The thought of leaving it randomly on the top and out of place just isn't right. So there's a second story. Same surgery during the summer months. I was carrying the bin bag from room to room to empty the bins. The door to room 8 was closed, but I could see under the door that someone was moving about. So I tapped on the door to see if it was okay to go in. There was no answer. So I tapped again. Again, no answer. So I tried the handle, but it was locked, and I went ahead and unlocked the door. There was nobody in there. The room was completely empty. And the surgery, by the way, is in Stockport near Manchester in the UK, if I didn't already say that. Anyway, have a great day, and thank you for all the podcasts. They're ace, guys.
Wow, those are some amazing stories.
Yeah, and I even believe just chatting with him. He's even got some more fun stories like that. But thank you so much, John, not only for, you know, sending in the story, but for just being such an amazing listener. I always love your feedback when you send me stuff and stuff that you've found that you found interesting that we talked about. I very much enjoy that. And that goes to anybody that's out there. You guys can reach us, you know, on our own personal Twitters and things like that, at Improv is Law and at Spocktology. Is that correct?
Nope.
Just kidding.
At @liberate_consciousness.
That's right. You can find those on our Fearscape Twitter and things like that. But yeah, reach out to us there or on Facebook or anything like that. You know, if we've got time, we'll love to chat. Fearscapepodcast@gmail.com as well. You can send in your listener stories or encounters or just say hi.
Now, what I really want to know is there was an absence of colloquialisms in that story. Did he write it for us Americans?
Or... I believe so. I think he knew. He's like, well, Stefan's going to be reading this. He probably can't handle it. And if Josh is going to read it, it's a no-go. So, but no, I mean, there's a little bits here and there.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely made that a little easy for me to handle.
They were great. I love the random, you know, missing toilet cleaner. If only there was a spirit who'd be willing to clean my bathroom.
I know. Instead of moving things, just go ahead and clean. And John, that would make your job to get out of debt even easier. So you can just hang back and listen to more Fearscape. So, but again, send those listener stories to us. We want your encounters. Submit a sighting on the website. Whatever you got to do, get those to us. Even if they're short, even if they're two sentences long, we love them. We want to share them because you're not alone. You are not alone. We have our experiences, as do many of our listeners. But Josh, we're going to go ahead and get out of here, my brother. Don't forget to be on the lookout, y'all, for the Debriefs Tech Talk. Astral Stew is coming. The January 2022 episode is going to be dropping. And keep your eyes open for everything Fearscape, man. Fearscape Media Network. Lance and I just dropped. We're getting ready to drop our hit list for 2021 of our top five favorite horror things of 2021. And boy, him and I have completely different lists this year. So that's going to be interesting and fun. And like I said, we have a lot of just new things that are going to be happening this year, as well as all the other podcasts on the network and shows and everything. Bourbon Spirits should be coming out, you know, in the coming months on YouTube. I'm so excited for that. So, but yeah, keep your eyes on our YouTube page and Fearscape Media and fearscapepodcast.com. Josh, you got anything else you want to share with the folks before we rock and roll?
No, I think that's about wrapped it. I mean, I think we're pushing 2 hours at this point, so these people want to go to sleep.
I don't. I want to stay here forever, but I don't. I got to edit, and that's always fun. But anyways, love you guys so much. Always go to fearscapepodcast.com for all the information and all the funsies. And again, this has been Fearscape Paranormal here at the Fearscape Media Network. This has been Stefan, and just a reminder to keep your eyes on the skies.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight, because things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. Fearscapepodcast.com/support.